Hello. In the previous audio clip, we began to discuss how we could have a unicameral legislative system with a single house that we decided to call the American House of Commons, and that we could have this single legislative house operating without the need for power clots. In other words, people who start unnaturally accumulating power around themselves and start misusing it and blocking the free flow of good ideas and good legislation. So we began to describe how we can have a system like that that works based on rules and not on privileges and powers, special powers arbitrarily given to certain people. And so we're going to continue talking about how we can have this House of Commons operating in a under a system that will promote good legislation without power clots. But before we go into that, I just must point out that I know that these details may sound a bit boring and laborious to listen to, because it sounds like this series of bureaucratic rules that we're being that we're describing right now that seem to have no big purpose in being described. But the reason why we're going through this laborious exercise is that when we're talking about truth, truth is always manifested in general principles. Truth is not a bag of heterogeneous facts or pieces of information that are put together in this big bag called truth. Truth is full of patterns. And when we start recognizing the pattern in a specific area of life, usually we can start seeing that pattern being applicable not only in that area, but in other areas of life. So I hope that as you're listening to this, you're just not not simply listening to a list of procedural rules, but instead are looking for general principles and ideas that are applicable not only to politics or the legislative process, but to many areas of life. So I hope it's that you see the value of that. The problem we've had with the Constitution, the current Constitution, is that it was written by founding fathers, by people who had, as we have shared briefly, some bad and terrible philosophical baggage. And that philosophical baggage, which we'll describe in more detail in a future audio clip, prompted them to think of truth as this series of concrete and unrelated pieces of information. And that's why the Constitution is littered with laundry lists. If you go through it, you'll see that it's one laundry list after another of specific things, because they were thinking in terms of specifics, because that's how they saw truth, instead of seeing truth in terms of general principles. They never derived the more general principles out of the specifics, and that's why we got stuck with this laundry list of a document. And every time there's a problem, what we do is we've just been adding an amendment to deal with the specific issue, instead of realizing, okay, why are we having to put this amendment in? What is conceptually wrong in our current document that we need to fix, so that we don't just fix this one problem before seeing it manifested elsewhere in some other way, and then fix that specific problem and keeps fixing specific little issues instead of dealing with a general problem. So it's very important to think in terms of general principles. And this specific exercise of explaining the legislative process is not just about the House of Commons that we're describing, the future House of Commons, but about general principles of how human beings can interact in a democratic way without falling into chaos and having the ability to produce in a fruitful way. So we're going to be continuing to talk about the rules and these ideas that need to be added in a new constitution to define the legislative process more clearly. And but before we go into that, I just wanted to make another comment about a recent headline at the time of this recording. I saw a headline, or I have seen for several days, a headline about the current Speaker of the House, the current power clot, Nancy, the whore Pelosi, who has been saying that she's going to form some sort of special committee to so-called investigate what happened in January 6th around Capitol Hill when people were protesting the fraudulent electoral vote. And the reason why that drew my attention is that conservatives were so happy and so proud of the conservative system and the conservative philosophy when the Senate filibustered the bill that was going to form a January 6th commission to do this witch hunt. And they saw it as proof that the Senate works, that the system works, blah, 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 blah. And that Pyrrhic victory, we said, is ridiculous to be proud of because we should have never been here to begin with. But aside from that, the fact that the House and the power clot in charge there is going to do it anyway is just a proof that that little victory that conservatives had when the filibuster was successful is of no use, is of no value, because the Democrats are going to find another way within this constitutional system full of holes to do it anyway. And they can do it because the Founding Fathers left in the Constitution the concept of a Speaker of the House, and they left in the Constitution that each House could define their rules whichever way they wanted. So by just giving this carte blanche, now we have a Speaker of the House taking advantage of the rules and defining a special committee to do this witch hunt even when the Senate had already filibustered it. So it's just another example of how the system is so flawed. The Founding Fathers left such a flawed system that it's just a matter of someone with an evil intention to find a way to get through a loophole and do whatever they want. And speaking of the filibuster, I'm still waiting for the Senate Republicans to filibuster, to do some sort of filibustering to force the whole system to find out what happened with Ashley Babbitt, the woman who was murdered by a police officer on that January 6th day, and to investigate the political persecution that the FBI has been doing. As many of you may know, the FBI at the time of this recording has been going to they've been going after people who they've been able to identify were present during the January 6th demonstrations, and even if they were just peacefully there, and even when many of them were being let into the Capitol Hill building, as shown in videotapes, by the police themselves. The police security in the Capitol building were letting the people in and guiding them through the corridors of the Capitol building, and now the FBI are putting these people in jail without due process, and they're just lingering in jail. Some of them have been, the FBI have gone to their houses and arrested them and handcuffed them in front of their children when they were not looting, they were not protesting, they were literally let in by the police, and that's what you would call entrapment. So they lured these people into the building to have an excuse to then go after them and then label the opposition as these terrorists and this and that, which was the original intention. Why if the filibuster is so effective, is so important, why haven't the Republicans said We are going to filibuster every single bill from now until kingdom come, until a commission is set up to investigate and prosecute the people who are doing political persecution in the FBI against American citizens in a way that you would only see in a third world banana republic type of country. This is unprecedented in American history, such a consistent political persecution of the opposition by the ruling party. And so the senator should be investigating what's going on and filibustering every bill. No budget bill, nothing is going to come out of the Senate until this is dealt with, until we find out who killed Ashley Babbitt and that son of a female dog is prosecuted and punished severely, and that the people who organized this charade be put in jail. If the senators had some guts, they would do that, and they would use the filibuster in that way. But as we've said before, the Senate is full of elitism, and elitists are by definition a minority that have been granted special privileges. And when a minority has been granted special privileges, a minority in the sense of a small group of people, then this small group of people are always going to fight to preserve those privileges that have been given to them. Just by definition, it's just by their nature, they're just going to be fighting to hold on to those privileges. So they are people who, by definition, do not make sacrifices. So the Founding Fathers, when they stupidly created the Senate in a bicameral system, they put in a cancer of elitism. And in that cancer of elitism, the filibuster monster surfaced. And that filibuster will never be used by these elitists in the Senate to fight for something that is worth fighting for, because they will only be used to fight for things that are politically beneficial to them. As elitists, they will never put their political career on the line to fight for a principle. So the filibuster will never be used for anything other than small matters or pantomime or, you know, charades to pretend to be braver than they really are. So I'm still waiting for the Republicans to stand up and question what's been going on surrounding the January 6th Commission. And all of this is just more proof that we need to change the system. So having gone through that very long parenthesis, let's continue talking about the new House of Commons that we could have under a new constitution. And we briefly began to mention a person that needs to be present in the system to make it work. And we call the person an HR. And HR, in this case, stands for House Referee. And you would say, oh, that kind of sounds like a Speaker of the House. So are we kind of reviving the Speaker of the House with just a different name? No, not exactly. This HR, this House Referee, will be a person appointed by the President to enforce the rules that we discussed in the previous audio clip and in this audio clip and future audio clips. So there needs to be a human element. I know the rules can, most of the rules can take care of themselves mechanically, but there are certain things that require the human touch. And for those things, we'll have an HR appointed by the President to enforce the rules that we're describing. And it will be possible for this HR to be fired, constitutionally there should be a motion that can be promoted to fire the HR. And a motion, it will basically be like a special kind of bill. It will go through the same workflow as any other bill, but a motion, the term motion will refer to a bill that has a very specific and limited functionality and purpose. So there can be a motion defined in the Constitution to fire the HR if he or she's not doing a proper job. But that motion, even though it's like any other bill, will require, let's say, 2/3 approval. So it will require a supermajority to be approved. So an HR cannot just be removed willy-nilly. And if that ever happens, the HR being fired, then the HR can select an interim. They can vote in an interim HR by simple majority until a new HR is appointed by the president. And the appointment doesn't have to be approved by this House of Commons. But if they don't like him, they can fire him again, and the president can bring in someone else. But the president can never submit the same HR twice. And so more than once. So the thing is that we'll have this HR, and what will this HR be like? He or she must be apolitical. In other words, that person is there just to enforce procedural rules, and is not there to promote a political agenda. A little bit like what you have with the Speaker of the House in Britain, who doesn't vote. When he takes the role of Speaker of the House of Commons, he also surrenders or gives up that loyalty that he has to his party. He's there just to promote the flow, the legislative flow, and this HR is going to have that similar role. He's there just as a referee. He will not vote. He will not appoint, do any chairman ship appointing. He's not going to decide what bills goes to the floor or what bill doesn't. He has no powers like that. And he can decide if a bill will not go to the floor, but only if it violates one of the very clear rules that will be defined for him or her to enforce. So he or she will not be able to say, oh, I'm not going to let that bill be voted on if I don't like it. It has to be because of some procedural thing that has nothing to do with the content or the political content or the ideological or whatever content of the bill. So it's like a referee. Like in a football match, you have a referee, and that referee is enforcing the rules. And as you know, a referee has done a good job when you don't notice him in a game. And if at the end of the game, all you're talking about is the referee, then it's very likely that the referee did not do a good job. So the more unnoticeable the referee is, the better, and the same will be with the HR. And just as a side comment, and before I say something else, this HR will not be allowed to change the rules that he or she enforces. Unlike the current Speaker of the House, who is the chairperson of the committee, the Rules Committee, right now the Speaker can make up their rules whichever way they want, and so they are a referee that makes up their own rules, and this HR is not going to have that. He or she will be given a specific set of rules, just like a football referee, and his or her job is just to enforce the rules. Simple as that. And by the way, this HR, as I said, it's going to be appointed by the president, not elected. He's not going to be one of the MCs, one of the members of Commons, one of the representatives. So I wanted to mention this as a side note, that whenever I think of HR, I personally think of a character on a show called The Office, the American version of the British show The Office. And in the American version, there's an actor called Toby, who is the HR, the human resources person in this Dunder Mifflin fictional company. And this Toby fellow is disliked by a lot of people. And they hate him because he's, very focused on procedures and things like that. And he's vilified, especially by one of the characters on the show. And it was interesting to me. Recently, I found out that the person who plays the character of Toby, the HR person, Even though you would think his role is kind of minor because he does not appear as often as the rest of the characters, it turns out that he is one of the show's producers. And in several seasons of the show, he was what they call the showrunner. And the showrunner is the leading producer of the show. So it's interesting that this minor character who is vilified and hated in the plot of the show is behind the scenes the showrunner, the one who is running the show, a lead producer. And that more or less is like a perfect description of what this HR is going to be. He might end up being hated by a whole bunch of MCs because he's going to be, you know, applying the rules and vilified. No one's going to like him, but he's going to be the showrunner in many ways, not because he's going to be a power clot deciding what bills he likes or doesn't like, but he's going to be running the show in the sense of coordinating how the bills flow in the House of Commons. So he has an important role, but it's going to be a role that is not going to bring much glory to him. And it might bring a lot more trouble and heartache than glory. So this HR is going to enforce the rules, and he must publicly post all penalties that he enforces on MCs, and he must justify the penalty publicly. So in our modern system, now that we have the internet, the HR can go online and post. He must post all penalties that he applies to an MC, and he must explain it so that the American people can go to this website and see how the HR is doing his or her job, and seeing what MCs are being punished, what reason there is for the punishment, and so forth, so that they can get a better sense of what the HR is doing, what the MCs are doing, and how the whole house is operating. And this HR is also going to have a very strong administrative role. He or she will be responsible for the public display of all bills submitted and their current status. So in a sense, he will have to work with software people now in the current days of the internet and computer systems, and he or she will be responsible for that computer system, that website where people can see the bills and how many thumbs up they have, as we were describing before, and what status they are, if they are still in the favorited pool or if they moved on to the voting queue and so forth. So he'll have that administrative role of making sure that the public is well informed of what's going on with the bills. Just to make sure that this HR doesn't abuse the rules or start fudging them to acquire power unnaturally, there can be a motion, a special motion, to try to put the HR on trial. But the motion it will be a bill that requires a supermajority, let's say, of three quarters of the MC. So if the HR starts doing things that are really way, beyond the pale, then this motion can be passed to put the HR on trial. As if he had committed a crime of shoplifting or worse. And if found guilty, then the Constitution should promote some sort of or specify some sort of financial penalty and even possibly jail time. But the HR can only be tried if he or she's been using he or she used his or her power or position for political purposes or maybe the person was just extraordinarily inept. And because of that extraordinary negligence, then the person will be held accountable and can be tried and even put in prison. And just to prevent that, the HR is going to be blackmailed by the MCs that if you don't do what we want, then we're going to try you and put you in jail. Then if they lose the trial, the MCs who accuse DHR lose the trial, they will have to pay a financial penalty for having sued DHR unfairly. So they are also going to be taking a risk if they go after a person that they shouldn't have persecuted. So there has to be some sort of system to make the HR accountable and also make sure that the HR is not unfairly exposed to political attacks from the MCs if they end up disliking him for the wrong reasons. Now that we've described the HR, let's move on a little bit to the bills and the president's role in it. There is going to be a president, and we'll describe him or her in future clips. But the role is going to be similar to what's going on now, but there are going to be some significant differences. And one of the differences will be that the president can submit bills into the favorited pool or eventually into the voting queue, just like any other MC. It's almost as he was a member of the House of Commons, only that, you know, he, even though he's not technically in the House of Commons, he'll be able to submit a bill. So if you want something passed, he can submit the bill just like he was, just as if he was an MC. And he can also speak on the floor of the House just like any other MC. And under the new system, we're going to have a president that is much more involved with Congress, with the House of Commons, than what we have right now, where the president is like off in this little Mount Olympus and descends once a year to talk to the Congress. That's not going to be like that. It's going to be this constant interaction of the president with the House of Commons to get things done. And he's not going to be interacting with the Senate. He's going to be interacting with the House of Commons. And if there's a special reason why the president needs to speak, then MCs who have the right to speak on the floor can yield their place in their speaking queue to the president or any other MC as needed. But other than that, you know, the president will be just like any other MC, promoting bills. And that's very important, to have a president who is legislatively inclined, who's thinking about specific bills to help the country out instead of just the rhetoric. So that's one thing we wanted to say about the president and his ability to submit bills. Now let's talk a little bit about some specific qualities that are important to enforce regarding bills. One of them is going to be, and this is something the HR is going to be on the lookout for, is that all bills must be around a specific topic. So no more chop suey bills, that's what I call them, where they just throw in a million different things, put them together and give it a name and call it a bill. Every bill must be around one specific topic. So no bill where they are, doing something related to drugs. And then as a final note, funding for a bridge, like $20 million bridge to connect two islands with a total population of 30 people. You know, what does that bridge have to do with the rest of the drug bill? And usually what happens, as you may know, is that these rubbish representatives or senators, especially it happens mostly in the House, they like to throw in all this special garbage inside the bill, unrelated, just pork. Just gets added, all these special projects, because the representatives want money to go to their states and they want to serve their political interests and the people that pay them behind the scenes. So they start introducing all this stuff. And so when it gets to the president for signing, he sees a list of all these things, all this pork that has nothing to do with the main bill. And what happens is, if the president or anybody else says, no, I'm not going to sign this bill with all this pork, then the Democrats, and they are usually the ones who do it, start accusing the president or whoever is opposing the bill, oh, you don't want to deal with the drug problem. So you must be against drug enforcement or whatever. So they start using twisting things politically. And then the president, because they usually have no gonads, they decide, okay, I'm going to sign the bill, because they're more concerned about how well they look politically than about the principle. And the reason why all of this happens is because we have a system that the founding fathers left behind that enables this, because bills are allowed to be anything. Why? Because each house can define their rules the way they want. That's what the founding fathers did, and now we have this mess. So we need to have in the Constitution a very clear rule. Bills must be around a specific topic. You can't have this. So if you want to build a bridge between those two islands with a total population of 100 people, and it's a $20 million bridge, if that bridge is so incredibly important, then put it in a separate bill of its own. But don't put it in an education bill, so that then if you oppose the bill because it has this stupid bridge in it, then you're going to be accused of being against education. Now the problem with this rule, this is where the HR has to step in, and why we can't have an automated system, is that how do you define a specific topic? Unless we have artificial intelligence, maybe 100 years from now, that can read through something and kind of artificially with AI determine, oh, this is covering two topics. I don't know if we'll ever reach that point, but until we do, if we ever do, we need a human person reading the bill and saying, okay, this is what is this bridge doing here? And why is this bill dealing with education and taxes and drug enforcement and all at once? So it has to be around a specific topic. And that also takes away a little bit of that compromise that constantly has to be done, where people are putting together a whole bunch of unrelated things in the bill because they want it to pass. So they start saying, okay, I'm going to get these five people to vote for it if I put in this little bit of pork, and then I'm going to get these other 10 people to vote for it if we put this pork. So the bill starts getting all compromised and with all these extra things just to get enough votes to pass. So we have to get rid of that whole thing just by putting this very clear rule. A bill has to be around a specific topic. And the HR, I'm a little unclear how this can be done to make it efficient, but the HR can look at a bill and say, okay, no, this is this bill has more. This is about three different things being put together in a single bill. So the HR can say, hey, can tell the MCs who are sponsoring or authoring the bill, hey, you have to split this up. And if the MCs see it, then they will, okay. So the bill is put on hold. They'll have to revise it and split it up somehow and then resubmit the, let's say the one bill becomes three bills, so they have to resubmit the three bills. And the moment they do that, then all the favorited votes, all the thumbs up that the bill may have received will have to be cleared, and they have to start all over again. And let's say that the HR looks at the three new bills and says, hey, there's still a lot of stuff in these bills that need to be split up. Then the HR will be able to say, no, I'm going to put this on hold, and it will go back, and they will have to re-split it until the HR, has no issues with it. And I think there should be a maximum of how many times a bill can go back and forth, maybe a maximum of three times or four times, after which the bill is declared a failure, and it kind of dies. Its life cycle, legislative life cycle, dies. And if the MCs want to try again, they have to try again with a completely new bill, but it will be counted as a failure to them. And we mentioned earlier in the previous clip that every MC can only have up to 10 failures in a single year, or I'm not clear about the number, but let's say 10 failures. So that will be a negative point on their record if the bill fails because they were unable to split it. Now, my concern here is that this is going to be a possible power clot situation, because the HR could then use this rule to artificially send back bills that he or she doesn't like. Like, this is going to become the excuse to clog up the system. And then require the MCs to put in certain things because, as if you say, you know, behind the scenes, hey, I'm not going to let this bill through until you add this or remove this because I don't like it. So we have to be very clear on how to enforce this in such a way that the HR cannot take advantage of the rule to promote or fight a certain political agenda. So I'm still not clear how that's going to work, but this is could be one of the points that could be used to then try the MC, try the HR, and find him guilty and put him in prison if he starts abusing this rule. But every time he does one of these things, it has to be public. It has to be, whenever he sends back a bill, he has to put it online and say, I said this bill is about too many different things, and that's why I'm sending it back, and explaining to the American people on this website why her or she is doing it. And if he can't do that, then he cannot send the bill back. And also, we have to make sure that the HR is doing his job, that he's not letting bills that have multiple topics just go through. And he can also be tried for that if he's not being efficient in that regard. And another thing is that bills, and this is going to be a little controversial to a lot of people, and it's going to be one of the big sore points, is that the bills must be, let's say a number, 10 pages long at the most. And I know that sounds like a very small number, but we have to get rid of these bills that have 2,000, 3,000 pages that no one reads. We know no one reads these things. They're voting on it, deciding the fate of millions of people with these bills that are being written by people behind the scenes, technocrats behind the scenes that are not elected. They're just drafting all this rubbish and putting it in stacks of, hiding a whole bunch of things in stacks of paper that are, you know, 1,000 pages long, and then we are faced with the consequences because no one's reading this garbage. So we need to put a limit on the bill. The bill can only be 10 pages long at the most. And again, if an HR finds a bill that's more than 10 pages long, maybe that can be an automated system and the bill can be kind of rejected automatically. Or and obviously we have to define, you know, what a page is, you know, with a certain font or whatever, so that, you know, we have a very clear definition of what a page is. And if it's more than X, let's say, where X, let's say it's 10, more than X pages long, then the bill is not acceptable. And the HR, if there's a human element there to decide the to enforce this rule, the HR could then maybe split the long bill or send it back or whatever, like a process similar to what he or she would do with a bill that has more than one topic in it. And this limit on the size of bills is going to help address an issue that I remember as a kid was something that Ronald Reagan kept talking about. He kept talking about he kept asking Congress for the power of the line item veto. I don't hear about that anymore. Maybe they still talk about that, but I don't hear much talk about that anymore. And what Reagan wanted was that he would look at a bill and see this monstrosity of a million different things and all this pork that was being added. The bill was about education, let's say, and it would have all these million other special projects that people were putting in there for their, you know, to get money for their states. And Reagan wanted to veto those pork clauses in the bills. He wanted a line item veto to say, okay, I accept this, I accept this, and I veto this part, and I veto this part. And I understand that, you know, there was a pushback on that, obviously, because people wanted to continue with the pork. But I do understand, at least from a theoretical point of view, why some people objected to that, because then that kind of gave the president some sort of kingly power that maybe he shouldn't have. So I understand Reagan's concern, but I think the line item option was not the right solution to the problem. It would have created another problem because now the president can just say, I like this, I like this, I like this, and I don't like this, and I don't like this. and maybe the bill has to have a certain balance of things. And you can't just take out one thing and leave another. Sometimes you have to see it as a balanced object. But if you have a bill that's around a specific topic, then you can have a certain balance of it, like an ecosystem that's being built. And it might not be a good idea to just take out one part, because maybe the other parts of the bill require that this one part be in it. But all of these concerns go away if the bills can only be 10 pages long and there must be around a specific topic. Then Ronald Reagan wouldn't have had to worry about vetoing specific parts of the bill because they were pork spending. So that has to be in the Constitution. We have to. And one thing before we end it, is that the HR must watch for the subterfuge lengthening of bills, because we have to, as we are thinking out these rules, we have to constantly think, how will the MCs try to game the system? How will they try to take advantage of the rules, find loopholes, get around things? We have to create an airtight system. So one way that an MC could lengthen a bill in a deceitful way is to add a clause in the bill that says that if you vote for this bill, then you are automatically approving something that we will write about in a future document. You know, just like in baseball, when they do a trade and they say, they traded so-and-so for X, for John, Jim, and a player to be named later. And so they could start adding, a clause or a bill to be named later. And then they put all the other stuff in this other bill. So there have to be things in the Constitution to prevent that sort of subterfuge lengthening of the bill. So now the bill that was 10 pages long has one clause at the end that says, and by signing this, you're approving in a very, ambiguous way what's happening in the next bill. And the next bill is going to be, another 10 pages. So now you lengthened the bill you made it a 20-page bill, even though it looks like two separate 10-page bills. So things like that have to be looked into. So we'll continue with that. And just one more thing, I think it's important to put it in before we end this clip, is that executive agencies can no longer legislate from the side. We've had this problem that all these federal agencies that get created, the CDC or, the Drug Enforcement Agency or the FDA and all these separate agencies that are supposedly part of the executive branch, and they start producing these rules that we are forced to abide by, and they no one is voting on them. There's just a bill that says, hey, the FDA can decide whatever they want about food and drugs. And then the FDA starts coming up with these stupid guidelines, and there's no one to enforce or validate those guidelines. So that has to go away. Constitutionally, no one can create a law if it doesn't go, a national law, if it doesn't go through the National House of Commons. The House of Commons has to approve the bill. It cannot be the rules cannot be drafted by a separate agency. The Congress, the House cannot just delegate that authority to anybody else. They have to be the ones producing the law of the land. But the executive agencies will be able to draft and propose regulations and submit them as bills, just like any other MC. I'm not too sure if they can just submit it as if they were like the president submitting a bill, just like any other MC, or if the bill needs to be sponsored by an existing MC. I'm not too clear on that, but I think the easiest system would be that the executive agencies that are created can submit a bill. So they say, okay, we want to enforce these regulations on these drugs, like the Food and Drug Administration. So they draft a bill that has to have the same rules as any other bill, as if it was drafted by an MC, and then they will put it into the favorited pool for voting and everything, and it will go through the same process, and that's how it's going to become legislation. But if it doesn't go through the House of Commons, they cannot enforce rules on the American people, because it has happened. These rules have to be approved by elected officials. So we have to stop all this subterfuge legislation that goes on all over the place. All these executive orders, all this, all these agencies coming up with all these rules, and on the side, all of this has to stop. And it will stop if we put it into the Constitution in a proper and clear way. So we'll continue talking about the legislative process, and we'll be talking about the budget, how the budget is going to be processed in more detail in a future clip. Thank you very much.